It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Yeah.
All right. There's straight up construction happening right outside the window. Someone decided to put a dump truck on the street and start digging up the concrete.
Didn't they know this was our recording day? What the hell?
Like, the second we hit record, the noise started.
Well, hello.
We come to you from another room.
My room, in fact.
Because, I'm not kidding, we pressed the recording button and the sound immediately got louder. It was crazy. You can still hear it faintly, but I don't know if you guys can.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Our neighbors also got a piano, and they're like this like cute little musical family, except it's not so cute when they play the piano, honestly, ever. Like, it's not cute when they play it ever. I have very low tolerance for piano playing unless it's really good. Love my neighbors, but they started playing the piano at 7:30 in the morning this morning, and I just, that was my last straw.
She's moving.
It sounds like it's in my room.
Yeah, it's quite loud.
It's crazy. And it's not good because they're kids.
And generally, we don't have a lot of issues with noise in our apartment.
You can't hear each other from the other end of the apartment, but you can hear everything. It's very bizarre.
It is bizarre. And someone's trying to ruin your life, it sounds like.
Yeah, the universe is against me.
Yep. There's a vendetta. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet, the symbiosis of humanity's two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes, weekly minisodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us a lot.
A lot.
A lot. Tumblr, a massively influential part of our teenage years. The place where many people in our age range found their favorite movies, were influenced to buy jelly shoes, in my case, and learned about social issues, idolized Kate Moss, and in a lot of cases, got exposed to porn for the first time. In this story is an amalgamation of many of the topics we've touched on in past episodes. Hipster porn culture, the domino effect of Fosta Sesta, sex nerds, and the perpetual dilemma of horny teens on the internet.
I did not fall for that jelly shoes trend. I remembered from childhood how much those hurt my feet, and I was like, absolutely not. I'm opting out.
I walked right into American Apparel, bought a pair, the rubber broke, got a piece of weird electrical tape, taped it back together.
Yeah, American Apparel should not make shoes.
Yeah, probably not, but you know what? I hear they're coming back again.
I'm down. Wait, jelly shoes or American Apparel?
Jelly shoes.
Oh, never mind. Just expose myself for no reason.
Now, I already know that you're familiar with Tumblr, and I'm going to take a wild guess and assume that our listeners are at least a little familiar with Tumblr. So I'm just going to jump into the story.
Nice.
So Tumblr is developed by 20-year-old tech consultant David Karp in the mid-2000s and is launched in 2007. It gets its name from the Tumblelog, which is the original term for what is now called microblogging. Microblogging is basically like short-form multimedia blogs, which was a departure from the kind of traditional like long-form written blog that came before. So while designing Tumblr, Karp tries to optimize its potential for creative output, and he chooses functions that will allow that. So for those who are unfamiliar with the platform, you know, users would create their own blogs where, you know, they post and or reblog content of all different mediums, you know, photographs, videos, text, GIFs, all of that. And then you could like follow other blogs, tag your content so that people looking for similar stuff can like find it. David Karp is born just a few years after the Gen X cutoff, like he's a millennial, but there's something very stereotypically Gen X in his values. He's like really against selling out and really kind of goes on about the creative potentials of Tumblr. And it just kind of reminded me more of like a Gen X mindset.
Tech equals Gen X, I don't know. It's
just, yeah, sort of, right?
They're inextricable.
Yeah. So Tumblr begins as a creative side project. And so like in the beginning, he just chooses not to like monetize it or do anything that could lead to that. He considers himself and Tumblr as being like an outsider tech startup thing, like Etsy and Kickstarter, which were also from around the same time. He refuses to move Tumblr from New York to Silicon Valley. Like we're different, you know?
Which is so funny because every tech startup is founded upon the I'm not like other tech startup
yeah.
mantra. Like that's the whole point of a tech startup. You're like, look, venture capitalists, look, I'm not like the other girls.
It's true, but honestly, in Karp's case, I believe it a lot more.
He's like not basic.
He is different for sure.
The Silicon Valley ones are wearing Aritzia. He's wearing Valley
An old
Village
flannel. Yeah.
He's wearing L Train vintage.
And yeah, it was. And he does like he often juxtaposes Tumblr against other like bigger platforms at the time, like Facebook and MySpace and YouTube. He hates YouTube, which I think really helps.
Rude.
Well, he hates it because he found that like the monetization aspect of it really stifled the creative potentials.
And he's right, but also you're so wrong.
And so kind of differentiating himself and Tumblr from these other platforms really helps it form its like cultural identity as the alternative social media platform. Do you remember the sort of stigma around young adults using social media when it first came around?
Young adults.
Like, I think there was a real kind of like millennials are narcissists vibe when Facebook and stuff first came around. I remember there's like a joke in Easy A where the teacher's like, you kids posting Facebook statuses is about everything in your day. No one cares.
It was like, oh, kids are oversharing, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely the sentiment. It was like, kids are oversharing, which is so funny because now it's like the boomers who are oversharing on the internet, like have no idea how to have any sense of decorum or privacy, essentially. Yeah, and there was also the stigma of just, oh, this is kind of like a game. Why are you occupying yourself with this frivolous nonsense?
Yeah, exactly. And it was like thinking about the way that millennials were framed by older generations. I think social media coming up when they were coming of age really lent to this idea that older generations had that they were narcissists and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think whatever flack people are getting at the time for using Facebook or MySpace, Tumblr is sort of the antithesis of that. Because like from the beginning, it does a very good job at establishing itself as being unique and being about, you know, creativity and expression. It's not about like sharing boring things from your life. Like it's curated.
Oh, and they're not wrong though. They're not wrong.
No, they're not wrong at all. And I think that Karp strongly actually believes in this. Like he would really talk about how with Facebook, people are just posting a bunch of shitty photos they've like taken of you at a party or something. You don't really have control over who you are online.
The amount of like DSLR photos that made it to a photo album, it would be like 350.
Every single take
useless.
Of yeah, one exactly. frame.
Yeah.
And he's like, Tumblr is where you get to really show who you are and like express yourself. And,
oh, he's so right.
Yeah. And he really believed in it. I kind of think Tumblr is like Facebook's cool cousin who smokes and goes to art school.
So like us. Flashback to my cousins calling me a hipster in 2018. And I was like, okay. Rude.
Honestly, it's kind of hilarious to be called a hipster in 2018. I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I was like, that's so funny of you.
And you know, how else do you describe certain people. Like,
well, we were hipsters, yeah. I would say.
By 2010, Tumblr had $85 million from investors and over a million users. So it grew fast.
Do you consider me tapped in?
Tapped in. Well, do you remember when you tapped into Tumblr?
Yes, it was 2010. And I was at, I'm old. I was at my friend's house and we were watching Monty Python. And then she was like, have you guys heard of this website? And I was like, oh no. And then she was kind of my cool friend. Like, I really admired her. I kind of aspired to be her. She was like well-dressed in middle school. And I was like, how do you do that? And so she introduced me to Tumblr. And then I started using it. And like, the days. I just remember the feeling of sitting down, putting on some music, and scrolling through Tumblr. Like, it was like a daily activity. And it was just kind of getting inspired. Like, I was so inspired by Tumblr at the time.
What was your blog style?
Well, it started out reblogging pretty girls. Like, it was like, I was really obsessed with this girl, Teresa Omen, who really blew up on Tumblr at the time. She was like this Australian model. I thought she was so pretty. It was girls that I really aspired to look like, who had beachy hair and like they were kind of waifish. There was this girl, Atlanta something something, or Alaska, I can't remember. But she was like this model. I think she may have been an Epa baby, but I can't remember. And she was very cool. And she'd always be smoking at parties. And it'd be these like kind of cobra snake type photos of her. So I'd reblog those. And then it slowly became a bit more artsy. Like, I'd reblog. I discovered a lot of really interesting photographers on there. If you go to my Tumblr page now, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Like, I'll go back and I'm like, oh, well, yes, I had taste.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the stuff I seen on my Tumblr when I've like gone back, honestly, yes, some of it is pretty good
and it's kind of inspiring. Like, I'm like, ooh, this is very yeah. Cool.
I definitely a lot of stills from things that I hadn't seen at the time. Yeah. I reblogged it, but now I have, or photographers I didn't know the names of and now I know,
like, so many Girl Interrupted stills which I still haven't seen.
I think it's really overrated. Read the book, I'm gonna say.
I'll take you up on that. Yeah, there were quite a few Tumblr movies. Twin Peaks, just started watching it. The amount of Audrey Horn images that I reblogged.
Definitely.
Of her kind of turning around, like she's dancing in the diner.
Yeah.
Famous.
I think it was like cool for introducing us to taste, even if we hadn't fully acquired that taste yet.
It did also completely influence what I was doing with my appearance. Like, I did dip dye and I was like, all these other girls are pussies. I'm gonna get dip dye, but I'm gonna dip dye half my hair. And so I like dyed half, I had really long hair, dyed half of the hair just in a straight line purple. And then it washed out so quickly, so I had half a head of like rusty orange hair for like a year.
If it makes you feel better, I also had half a head of rusty orange hair because I did ombre at home. And
dip dye kind of was the predecessor to ombre.
Yeah, when I went to the salon, I was like, I should probably get a trim. And she's like, no, I'm going to cut all of this blonde out of your hair. I had such long hair.
All of this is going to come back in maybe 4 months. So
yeah. No, Tumblr completely influenced my style. Like I said, jelly sandals. I mean, all I wore was American Apparel and Urban Outfitters. And I was really into like soft grunge aesthetic.
Oh, yeah. Sky Ferreira.
Oh, of course.
I also discovered Lords Royals on there. Like, it hadn't mm-hmm. It hadn't really blown up yet. It taught me how to code, first of all. I learned how to code a little bit, and I coded playlists onto my Tumblr, so when you went on it, songs would play.
I never learned to code.
I mean, that was the only thing I knew how to do.
No, but it was cool.
No, it was, yeah, I guess, yeah, it was pretty cool. I was on this girl's Tumblr. She's like a famous Tumblr blogger. She had Lord on her playlist.
Yeah, I also, I think I either discovered it on Tumblr or like Rookie Mag, which I'm kind of working in tandem together.
Oh yes.
It was cool for when it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you describe the culture of Tumblr generally? The demographic?
Like young women, femme people, I think for the most part were on it. But then again, like, I don't know, a lot of guys I knew actually secretly used it at the time too.
And I feel like before it became a thing that like we as teenagers were doing, there was a lot of guys in blogging culture probably, and like I think hipsters were using it for like photography blogs and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there were a lot of like men's fashion influencers on there that a lot of guys I knew were influenced by, but they kind of joined a bit later. I will say we were on the train earlier than the boys.
I think in our gen,
yeah,
or like in our age group.
Yeah.
But like also ideologically, would you say it was like more left-leaning?
Oh, that's the thing. See, all of the politics of Tumblr are kind of missed. I think I was like 1 year too old or something. I got off a little earlier than I think a lot of the stuff started cropping up. Or like maybe I just, by the time the stuff started popping up on Tumblr, I was too much in the picture-based realm that I wasn't seeing it. But I think younger, what I've seen, a lot of fanfic.
Yeah.
A lot of eating disorder, pro-Anna culture. Mm-hmm. For the most part, young, so you would assume left-wing, just because of the age.
Yes. Well, because I think it wasn't that we, like, were on before the more progressive stuff came to Tumblr. I think it was just Tumblr was segmented.
It was, like, algorithmic.
You only saw the blogs that you were following, right? And then seeing what they reblogged. So you were kind of streamlined, right?
Yeah, you really had to curate what you wanted to see. Yes. And it actually worked like that.
Yeah.
So fucking Instagram.
It's, because Tumblr actively chose never to adopt the kind of algorithms that Instagram adopted. They really committed to keeping with this kind of format.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very curated. If you were in like an aesthetic-based Tumblr, which I think both of us were, you weren't necessarily going to see stuff as politically involved.
Should we share our Tumblrs in the description?
Oh my God, maybe. I'll have to check it.
Mine is literally a Black Keys lyric.
I love that. but I think, for example, the Occupy movement, like We Are the 99% came from Tumblr. So it was like political from the beginning. It's just, you know,
we weren't getting the political side.
But I will say, like, I think it did expose me to feminist ideas and stuff, like even from an aesthetic standpoint. You could sense that leaning.
Mine was sheerly vapid.
Maybe I was on Tumblr like a little longer than you.
Yeah, probably. Well, you're famously a year younger, so.
Well, there you go. So I would say, like, outside of, our experience on Tumblr, like we were saying, there's a lot of fan culture. There's a lot of niche communities. Basically, anything under the sun you could probably find in Tumblr. But like we were saying, it's known to be especially popular with young people like us when we were using it. What do you think the draw is for teenagers on Tumblr?
I think the curatorial aspect. I think teenagers really like to curate their own identities. I think that teenagers are still discovering who they are, so they want to be inspired. They want references. They want to defer to other people. And I think being able to be exposed to that really was big. Like, it's just a very identity-forming platform. And I think that is kind of the main draw. We also just like pretty things. Like, I don't know. Everyone is drawn to aesthetically pleasing images. But I think young people especially. And the communities. I think there were a lot of lonely teenagers out there who were really brought together by Tumblr, by their shared interests. And I think that also helped.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the forming identity thing is definitely really important. Especially because, you know, Tumblr is sort of a space that allows for a level of anonymity, which we've kind of discussed in past episodes. But, like, it's something that people find very liberating.
Especially as you juxtapose it to Facebook, which is all about how many friends do you have. Like, it's actually quantifying your social group and your social status. And Tumblr's the complete opposite.
Well, yeah, of course. You have to be yourself on Facebook. It's the whole point also. And you're, like, supposed to be documenting your life in these very mundane terms.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Tumblr, it gives the opportunity to express yourself. I mean, at an age where you're developing who you are, you're experimenting with tastes, but you're also experimenting with sort of how you portray yourself and your identity. And there's just a lot more freedom there. And I think especially if you're somebody who like has a really niche interest, it kind of provides privacy to really let your passion fly, you know, without worry about being nerdy.
It's interests first versus social group first.
Yeah, exactly. I've also seen Tumblr be described as occupying a space that is both private and public at the same time, which I thought was really interesting.
Because it was kind of like your little home. You go back to your page and it's like your home. And then you can see your archive and that's kind of, I don't know, it's very personal.
Totally. And like you were saying, it's so different from Facebook. Like you're not necessarily going to be monitored by parents or peers. I think I followed a few girls from high school on Tumblr, but wasn't giving my Tumblr at out. It wasn't for that.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people were meeting each other on Tumblr, but honestly, I did not use it as a social networking site. It was like a purely what should I wear tomorrow kind of site.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there's like a freedom there of having something that is publicly available for consumption, but privately associated with you almost. You're in this in-between space. And especially, you know, your parents might see what you're posting on Facebook. They might see what you're posting on Twitter, but they're not going to see what you're posting on Tumblr.
No.
Dana Boyd put it like this in her piece, Am I a Blogger? She says, over the last 30 years, we've systematically eliminated young people's ability to participate in public life. They turn to technology as a relief value and as an opportunity to have a space of their own, as a chance to be public. And then teens want to be part of public life, but they want privacy from those who hold power over them. Having both is often very difficult, so teenagers develop sophisticated techniques to be public and to have privacy.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of teenagers in the public sphere, because we were talking recently on a podcast, Cold Pod, that we were interviewed on, and we just kind of gotten into a conversation about how teenagers can't exist in public without being considered loitering. Like, they can't afford to go into most businesses, they can't afford to dine, they can't afford to be patrons, and that's most of the businesses out there. So it's like, where are they supposed to go? They'll congregate in malls, but now malls are closing down slowly, so then they can't congregate there. So it's like, more and more there's a crisis of teenagers not being able to operate anywhere. I find that teenagers have a lot of run-ins with the authorities simply because they're constantly in these like public spaces that they're not supposed to be. Like, we used to hang out in parking garages and parks, and like, we would get apprehended a lot by like security or the cops, and it was like, where am I supposed to go? And it's even worse for teens in the suburbs who, if they don't have a license, are completely dependent upon their parents or their older siblings to get them around. So I think that makes a lot of sense that a lot of teenagers turn to technology, because it's like, we've just made it so inhospitable for them.
Yeah. But then also, in a way, like she's saying, is that almost the surveillance over then these like spaces online is making it harder for teenagers to even utilize it in that way.
Well, totally. And going back to our chat rooms episode, I think that's a great example of it.
Yeah. You know? It's interesting. Did you feel like this was your experience at all as a teenager with the internet?
Yes. I think maybe a bit more as a tween, like in middle school. I got Facebook really young. I got it in grade 6. So it would have been like 2008 or, yeah, I think 2007 or 8. And my sister, who was looking out for my best interests, but she told my parents because she found out. She found my profile and they ended up changing the password. And like, she was trying to protect me. Like, she was worried. This is like the stranger danger era, whatever. I got it so I could talk to my crush, and I could add him on Facebook and whatever. And I felt like really blocked off from social life. Like, I felt like I couldn't connect with people. I felt like I was missing out. I had a lot of FOMO because all the kids at school would be connecting on Facebook and I wasn't. I don't know. I think as a teenager, I was pretty like sociable, and we live in a city, so it was a bit easier to kind of hang out with people. But the summer that I really became attached to Tumblr was when it was one summer in high school where for some reason I just didn't have a lot of friends at this point. Grade 9, I had friends. Grade 11 and 12, I did, but grade 10, I didn't. And the two friends I did have were gone for the entire summer. So it was 2 months all by myself. And I turned to Tumblr because that was my outlet. And that's where I got really into Ariana Grande. I got really into like learning how to braid hair. Like, I got really into learning how to do waterfall braids and stuff. And I think it's because I needed an outlet. I was lonely. It was fun for me. Like, I had a nice time, but I did spend my summer on the computer.
No, I had a similar experience that like, I got very into Tumblr and like kind of fan cultures on Tumblr just this one summer because I didn't have enough friends. And then when I did, I kind of didn't need it anymore, I suppose. Honestly, wait, was that the summer of grade 10 for you?
Yeah.
That was the summer of grade 9 for me. We
could have been friends. Oh. We didn't know each other in high school, really.
No, not for most of it.
We also lived close. We really, missed opportunity.
What a missed opportunity. But look at us now.
It was also the summer where I was like, I need to have beach waves. So I kept buying these like saltwater sprays. And then I was also like, okay, I also need to be blonde or I need to have highlights. So I kept putting lemon juice in my hair and going outside and sitting in the sun. Didn't work.
Okay, you know what I did that summer? I had chalk pastels and I saw this hack. I don't know where I saw it, where basically you could like wet your hair and then take a chalk pastel and rub it over your hair straighten it and give yourself like a temporary streak. So I got really into doing that.
Kids are so creative.
As much as Tumblr is associated with like aesthetics and creativity and social justice and all of that, it was also associated with porn from pretty early on.
Such a funny transition.
I know. I realized. It's so true. I was kind of like, I don't know how to.
But it is so true.
Yeah. There's a 2009 interview with Vice where David Karp and the journalist are like joking about what their favorite adult blogs are. And the term used to describe their community guidelines around porn was go nuts, show nuts, whatever.
Whoa, go nuts, show nuts.
Yeah. So it was like,
free the nut.
Yeah. I think Karp believed very deeply in having this really free and open space for people to express themselves.
Oh my God,
so,
who is this man?
He's also, I don't know what he looks like now, but he was kind of hot.
Taken?
Probably.
Damn.
And it wasn't just that porn existed on Tumblr. It was like a popular part of it for many users. A 2013 study found that 11.4% of Tumblr's most popular sites at the time were not safe for work. And then 16.6% of Tumblr's traffic came from adult blogs, which this actually kind of made me think of our Sasha Gray episode a little bit, just porn on Tumblr. Can you think of why, maybe?
I feel like a big part of Sasha Gray's whole persona was this kind of aesthetic indie sleaze combo of porn and intellectualism and photography. And I think Tumblr really was the home for a lot of that. So I think that would be my first guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Tumblr started in 2007. Sasha Gray's career started in 2007. And I think as we get further along the timeline, this kind of short window where Tumblr was able to have all of these things coexist on the site did feel like kind of a blip in the culture that, similar to Sasha Gray being like a mainstream hipster porn star, like, I don't know how something like that could have happened before or after. It feels like a blip in the timeline.
It was a moment.
Yeah, basically. Basically, that's all, but I just thought it was really interesting. And then, you know, in that episode, we talked about the importance of open discussions around like kink and stuff in order to keep it safe. And I think that as far as the internet goes, like, the place to do that was Tumblr, because there were communities for basically every interest on Tumblr, and that extended to sexual interests. And what made it different from a traditional porn site is the included discourse and like community that surrounded the content. So you'd have like blogs dedicated to really niche things, or like archiving vintage erotica, or educating people about kinks. And like, it was a bit of sex nerdery, but I think it really allowed people to consume stuff and then also talk about it in a way that, I don't know, encouraged.
In an unprecedented way. Yeah. Like, it destigmatized it.
Yeah, exactly. So like, why, I guess I was going to say, why do you think that would be important? But you kind of answered it.
Destigmatizing.
Yeah. And I think Tumblr existing in like a private / public space meant that adult content was existing in a private / public place, and quite literally being posted to a social media website to be accessed by anybody, which include teenagers. But honestly, I'm going to argue that maybe that wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
I don't think it's weird or bad for teenagers to watch porn.
Well, like, exactly.
They do be doing that.
And that's what I was going to say. We all know that teenagers watch porn, and that's not like a groundbreaking piece of information.
The world pretending that teenagers don't have sexual interests.
Well, exactly. And I think that for a while, Tumblr was able to be this like kind of secret place where that kind of thing maybe wasn't being said in the open, but was being, like, understood, because it's a young user base and it's a place known for porn.
Well, also, you're a teenager. Back then, a lot of people didn't have their own personal computers or laptops. So it's like, instead of, you know, getting cracked down on by mom and dad when they go through your internet search history and find Pornhub there, Tumblr can be, like, kind of a good way to hide it.
Well, exactly, yeah. And I think, especially for, like, our age group, I think it created a safe space to, yes, see it without feeling like you could be monitored. I don't know, even if it's not like outward pornography, I think people use it as a way to express their sexuality, like reblogging like slightly more promiscuous photos and stuff. We talked about free nipple at the end of our last episode.
Free nipple, yes, free nipple.
But like posting, no, like, free, yes, free, yeah, 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 free the nip. Like, oh yeah.
Free nipple.
Free nipple. But I think like
free nipples for everyone.
Posting like nude art and photography, or like reblogging it from other stuff, and like, I don't know, there just felt like a certain like liberation that felt exciting to
it's me, like dipping your toes in more sexually explicit content, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like you're expressing yourself without expressing yourself. You're like reblogging other content.
Yeah.
Do you think that for our age group, Tumblr played an important role in like our sexual development?
I think, even though I wasn't really consuming sexual content on Tumblr at all, or any sort of political content really, I think Tumblr was very much influenced and made famous, you know, publications like Rookie Mag and stuff, like, which really encouraged kind of like female sexuality and feminine sexual desire in a way that definitely influenced us. Hannah just mentioned to me off air. We went to a high school that had no dress code whatsoever, and I really pushed it. I would come to school in just a t-shirt, like no pants. I had just a t-shirt and tights, I was really ahead of the no pants trend, but I kept coming to school in just tights and a t-shirt that had a picture of boobs on it, like a picture of a woman's boobs. It was like kind of a grainy black and white photo of a woman's boobs. And the principal, every time I came to school, and it was like, you can't wear that. And I was like, yes, I can. Please stop censoring women's bodies. You're making it a thing that it isn't.
And I think that, like, even if we weren't directly thinking this is Tumblr, I think it was, like, in part.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the amount of hours we spent scrolling on it would have had to have unconsciously influenced us in some way.
Well, even I think about, like, that Patrick Collins t-shirt, which I know is Rookie Mag related, but I also, like...
But Rookie Mag got kind of famous
from Tumblr.
From Tumblr in a bit. In
and
a way.
They took imagery from Tumblr. Tumblr took imagery from Rookie Mag. It was, like, a kind of
symbiotic
back and forth
relationship.
Well, yes. And Patrick Collins had this t-shirt that she made for American Apparel, and it was, like, an illustration of a vagina, like, bleeding and, like, some fingers, basically.
And it had pubes.
Yeah, and it was, I think it made the news, but it was, like, censored, of course, on TV. And I remember I had friends who bought the shirts and would wear it to school just to be like, does anyone want to challenge me on this?
Yeah, it was a bunch of girls from our high school got them. Yeah, I think there was definitely an aspect to that. I also remember the reason that that blew up was because Petra Collins on Instagram had posted a photo of the t-shirt and it had been taken down and her account got deleted, even though she was like a burgeoning photographer. So I think Tumblr being the antithesis of Instagram, that was kind of the genesis of like Free the Nipple, definitely would have been a part of that.
Yeah, I think there's no way I would have felt as liberated at that age just with like expressing myself had it not been for, at least in part, Tumblr.
My argument was often, but it's art.
Yeah.
We also went to an art school where there was a huge discussion because our principal had come from a regular high school into this one and had like no conception of artistic freedom, I guess. And there were some visual arts paintings that had been done in the visual arts department. Visual arts paintings. There were some paintings that had been done in the visual art department that were like nudes. Not even of the students, but just of people. And they would be up in the hallways because their art would be presented in the hallways. Like, all of the doors in our school were painted by the visual arts students. And I remember our principal being like, you need to take that down. Like, that's pornography. And there was a huge conversation because we were like, but it's art. But it's art.
And it was art.
It's a painting. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Just hearing other people's, like, stories about Tumblr, like, I do think that there were a lot of people where this was like their first introduction to porn, even just through like GIFs or like imagery or just their first kind of step into consuming like sexual content. I think that there's something kind of special about this just because of the discourse that also came with Tumblr that like in a way made it the less scary and maybe more educational way to be introduced to these things as a young person. And I feel like a lot of the coverage on porn on Tumblr is like usually written from the perspective of people who were adults using it at that time. So I just thought it'd be interesting to think about it from like the teenager perspective a little bit because that was our experience. I haven't used Tumblr since I was a teenager.
I find it really hard to get into these days.
Yeah, Maya can't get on.
They won't let me in.
And then on top of that, like, you know, people were using Tumblr and like not safe for work content as an educational tool because of the lack of censorship guidelines. You know, organizations were able to start blogs dedicated to sex ed for adults and for young people. I think like a lot of like queer organizations did that, Planned Parenthood as well. But of course, having porn and having these things on Tumblr from a business perspective is a bit more of like a shadier area.
So how did they make money on Tumblr?
So we're going to talk about that. As late as 2012, David Karp was insisting that he has no interest in selling Tumblr to a bigger company. But then by 2013, Tumblr is acquired by Yahoo for $1.1 billion.
Okay.
And their CEO, Marissa Meyer, had famously promised to not screw it up.
Is that considered a hostile takeover or like a bear hug? And are those the same thing?
I don't know.
I watched Succession and I don't remember.
I don't know. I think there were a few people gunning for Tumblr by 2013. I don't know if he had like a change of heart or what. But the problem with Yahoo acquiring it is that Tumblr isn't profitable at all. Up to this point, Yahoo had made a number of business blunders, like they would buy cool startups like Flickr, and then they would just kind of neglect them and not know what to do with them.
Yahoo's corny as fuck, dude. People who used Yahoo as a search engine, like, it was just already a joke so early on.
And I think they were really trying to make themselves relevant at this time.
And just messing it up.
I mean, screwing it up, infamously. After Tumblr is bought, David Karp stays on as CEO, and they sort of experiment with like some forms of integrated ads, but he really hates the idea of implementing like traditional banner ads onto the site.
Oh god, banner ads are the worst.
Yeah, exactly. And he is like, he really cares about the user experience. He doesn't want to like cheapen that.
Well, we discussed this with BuzzFeed and the way that they did more integrated like native advertising because they didn't want to have banner ads all over the site, because banner ads are just horrible. Like, I would never want to patronize a company that's blocking an article I'm trying to read, for example.
For an ad. Yeah, exactly. So it was more like companies would start blogs that were like sponsored blogs, and they might show up in your feed, but it wasn't quite the same.
It's kind of like TikTok, the way that the companies will have their own accounts.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it was kind of hard to get certain advertisers on the platform because of its association with porn. But to Yahoo's credit, they do not immediately ban not safe for work content on Tumblr. In 2013, they do introduce safe mode, which filters out any content flagged not safe for work. But like, the content is still allowed to exist. It's just kind of...
it's in a different tab.
Yeah, exactly. But then it's after Yahoo is acquired by Verizon in 2017 that things like really change. So David Karp steps down as CEO. And then they tighten their rules around adult content and put safe mode on automatically, which hides all material marked as like sensitive. So it used to be before, like, you could go on Tumblr without an account and go visit blogs and like see not safe for work content without being logged on and kind of not being attached to any kind of like account. But then with these changes, those blogs were not visible to the public unless they made an account and then turned off safe mode.
I think this has something to do with how hard I find it to get into Tumblr. I got locked out of my account. It's been really hard to get back into my account. It's been almost impossible to restore it. I don't know. I just think Tumblr became really impossible to navigate after this all happened.
Yeah, it could be.
But I have trouble accessing things publicly.
I haven't tried to access things publicly, but in a while. But I know I've been able to get into my account, but maybe there's like been some recent changes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been years that I haven't been able to get in. That's but they so don't weird. Even let you recover it. Like, it's very difficult. And then, yeah, I was researching for this video and I couldn't take a screen cap of some Romeo and Juliet explore page pictures. Like, I got bumped out of the page.
That's so strange.
Yeah.
Weird.
Maybe they have me as, like, a persona non grata.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you crossed a line.
I crossed a line.
And then a big event happens that really marks the end of porn for Tumblr.
Oh no.
Do you want to guess?
Is it Fosta Sesta?
Oh, well, yes! When Fosta Sesta is passed, one of the companies that takes it very seriously is Apple. And shortly after, they remove Tumblr from the App Store because of reported child porn.
Apple do one good thing since Steve Jobs died challenge. The challenge is done. You failed.
And the thing is that, like, Apple has sort of a monopoly over, like, phone apps because so many people have iPhones.
And, yeah,
like,
the Apple monopoly is one of the worst things that has happened in the 21st century.
They can sort of, like, use their rules willy-nilly as they want. And it's been pointed out that, like, you know, companies like Twitter and Reddit, which also host porn, were never, like, taken out of the App Store the way Tumblr was because they're bigger, they're more popular. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, basically, like, if Tumblr wanted to get any traffic, they were going to have to, like, follow the rules of Apple in order to get people to download the app from the App Store.
It just feels like everyone's bullying Tumblr.
It does feel like that because it's different and alternative.
Yeah, they're getting bullied because they're the girl who has blue streaks in her hair.
Exactly. Tumblr, yeah, has to basically appease Apple, and they begin removing NSFW blogs and content from the site before announcing that they will just be banning porn altogether. And it seems like people were mad at Tumblr for selling out and prioritizing profits in the aftermath of this over, like, listening to its user base. But do you think that's fair?
No, okay, let's just go on the assumption that this is a bear hug, or that this was kind of like a hostile takeover. I don't know the language. I don't have an MBA, but it feels like Tumblr got strong-armed into all of this. I don't think this is what they wanted. I think that they were forced into it by way more powerful interests than themselves, way more powerful players. And so I wouldn't point the blame at Tumblr. I'd point the blame at Verizon and fucking capitalism.
But also at Apple.
And also at Apple. But I blame it on the bigger players at hand. Like, Tumblr's the little guy here.
Well, yeah, and it's like, yes, Tumblr, like, cultivated this special user base, and that's what makes the platform special. And it sounds like, historically, they've done a good job at listening to their users, but in this case, they couldn't really, because there wouldn't be a Tumblr, potentially, if they were just listening to their users.
As someone with no understanding of business outside of Succession, I'll say that these people don't seem to understand business. Like, you just don't get it.
They're not women in business. Wibs? Wait.
Whoa.
Wait, I guess women in STEM isn't an acronym.
No.
I'm also not a woman in English literature. It's me sounding like a fucking idiot every day.
No, you're so smart.
Thank you. Yeah, it just feels like we've learned anything from last week's episode, like, the culprit is really FOSTA, SESTA, and, like, the kind of increased push for censorship online.
The culprit is suburban parents. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah,
calm down. And children.
Yeah. Well, yes. And I don't know. It's like, this is one of the few cases where I feel like we're talking about an internet company, and I'm like, honestly, they seem to be trying, or at least they were trying.
They're trying
for a while.
Their damn best.
And I really, like, respect what they were trying to do.
David Karp, we forgive you.
Data.
If you're on Raya, let us know.
So the Tumblr usership does drop after the porn ban by apparently 30%. But
how? Damn.
Yeah.
I feel like such a nerd that I wasn't even a part of that.
I mean, look, the other 70%. Wasn't using it just for porn.
Virgins.
But, you know, Tumblr was decreasing in popularity for a while. We stopped using it after a bit. This isn't the only reason people stopped using the website. But, like, can you think of any other reasons people might have stopped using Tumblr?
I think maybe it just has a cap as to what you're able to do on it. Like, I think with Instagram, even Facebook, even though Facebook's been kind of killed a bit, at least the mass exodus of young people from Facebook. Mm-hmm. But, like, Instagram, let's say, the kind of longevity of the app is because it is about you, and you keep growing and you keep changing. And because the app is about you, it can also evolve alongside you. But with Tumblr, it's about your interests, and it's about finding community when you're lonely and young. It's about aesthetics. And I just don't think that it can sustain itself. Like, it kind of requires time. It's not something you can do passively. Like, you kind of have to sit down on Tumblr and use it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Instagram, you can just scroll. Tumblr's not the same. Like, you kind of have to be thinking, because you're like, am I curious? I guess you can scroll on Tumblr. That's the whole point. But it just felt a bit more dedicated to me.
No, I get what you mean. Like, I think it fell out of fashion a little bit.
Yeah, it fell out of fashion because it was also so associated with a specific aesthetic, even though that's not what it was founded upon, but it just became associated with that aesthetic, that it became kind of integral to that era.
Yeah, and I also think, like, this is something we saw a bit with Vine. And, you know, I think this applies even more to Tumblr than Vine, but social media became really about acquiring, like, not only social capital through, like, follower bases and through your profile, but also monetary capital.
You can't do as brand deals, because we're in the age of the self becoming the brand.
Yeah.
And because Tumblr isn't about the self.
Well, also, like, on Tumblr, it's like, you don't necessarily have your followers on your blog, like, the number. Yeah. Like, it's just not the same thing.
Tumblr and Vine were purely for pleasure.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate evolution of the internet is that now the internet, because it is just human life now, isn't about pleasure. It's about work. Because capitalism reorients everything under the market.
And social media now is supposed to be an extension of our real lives. Like, we live half of our lives online.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's become human life. Everything falls subject to market forces.
Well, exactly. And it sounds like maybe Tumblr became a bit insane. Like, just with all of the niche groups. Like, there were fucking weirdos on there.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely had a lot of flaws.
Like, the discourse got a bit insane.
The pro-Anna community. Cuckoo crazy. Cuckoo crazy.
Columbine fanatic.
Columbine.
Was a thing. You know, there were, like,
they'll find anywhere to go, though.
But
those guys? Reddit?
Well, I think a lot of people left Tumblr around this time and moved to spaces like Reddit and Twitter, which is why when people will go this platform is Tumblr now. Like, people talk about Twitter discourse mirroring the discourse on Tumblr. It's because a lot of people left Tumblr. Like, there was a mass exodus and came to Twitter.
So all the annoying people, basically. Yes. And that's why these apps
suck. So when you complain about annoying people on Twitter, you can blame Tumblr.
Yeah, it's not the app. It's the annoying virgin behind the screen. This whole season is going to be me calling people virgins. Instagram has started to become my version of Tumblr because I very much curate my explore page. I make sure that it's all aesthetics.
Your explore page?
Yeah, my Instagram explore page. I don't want to see tweets on there. I don't want to see text. I don't want to see text anywhere. I don't want to see memes and I don't want to see videos. I just want to see like pretty images.
That's what I use Pinterest for.
No, I don't want to have to go to another app. It's all in one app.
True.
What else am I going to see on my explore page? I don't want that shit.
My Instagram explore page is so fucking random. I'm getting so many Addison Rae updates.
Case in point. Maybe you should curate it anymore.
But then I keep clicking on them because I'm like, what's Addison Rae up to?
You did it to your dang
now
self.
Now I'm dedicated.
You did it to yourself. This is an Addison Rae friendly podcast.
Keep it up, girl. Love what you're doing. Want to talk about Tumblr? She's bringing back Tumblr aesthetics.
Stop. It's so funny.
It's so funny. I love it.
It makes me feel ancient.
She's camp to me. I don't know. In 2019... Tumblr, which was bought 6 years earlier by Yahoo for $1.1 billion, is sold to WordPress's parent company, Automattic, for just $3 million.
Oh, but also I love WordPress.
Yeah, and I honestly like think that their CEO, Matt Mullenweg, sounds pretty cool for a tech CEO. Like, he's in the blogging world, and he kind of seemed like maybe the best possible person to be taking over a site like Tumblr. He comes from the right background. He seems to share a lot of the values of David Karp. And from what I've heard is past Tumblr employees, like, don't necessarily feel like it was getting enough attention within Automattic. But in fairness, it's kind of like a...
It was a dying, it was a sinking ship.
Yes, but it seems like they have more understanding of its needs than something like Verizon or Yahoo.
Yeah, Verizon's just straight up evil. Automattic, WordPress housed my middle school blog, Who the Pooh Cares, and so therefore we have to stand.
We should share that.
Who the Pooh Cares, there's probably some cancelable shit on there. Me, 12 years old. The whole premise of the blog was that I swore a lot, but every swear word was replaced with the word poo.
Oh my god. You've always been like a little edgy misanthropic guy.
Yeah, it's like a very misanthropic blog. And it's like full of 2008 jargon. Like,
crazy. So good.
It was giving like, can I has a cookie? Can I has a hug? Sorry. Rafflecopter.
But it sounds like, you know, maybe Automattic is trying to revive Tumblr in some way. And in 2022, 48% of Tumblr's active users and 61% of its new users are Gen Z.
Whoa.
So it seems like maybe teens or young people are still continuing to like find and use Tumblr, which is kind of cute.
Wow, adolescence is eternal.
Yes.
People, they don't stop being young because new generations are young.
Oh my god, isn't she eloquent, ladies and gentlemen? A beautiful mind of our generation. In a piece for The New Yorker, Kyle Chayka suggests that Tumblr becoming irrelevant might lay the groundwork for it becoming cool again, which I kind of thought was funny. He writes, Tumblr's very status as a relic of the internet, easily forgotten, unobtrusively designed, more or less unchanged from a decade ago, is making it appealing to prodigal users as well as new ones.
I kind of see it. This feels a bit think piecey, to be honest, because like MySpace would have come back if that was the philosophy,
that's
right?
A good point.
Like, MySpace was a predecessor for all these platforms and it's never come back, and it was very irrelevant, very aesthetically emblematic of an era, and it hasn't resurfaced.
I feel like maybe the drop-off off of MySpace was like steeper than the drop-off off of Tumblr, because there were people that were keeping it afloat.
I suppose. I mean, we just don't know about the drop-off of MySpace, unfortunately. But also, there was a huge drop-off of Tumblr when the porn ban happened, so
yeah,
it's hard to say.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think that MySpace was sort of replaced by Facebook because they could serve similar functions. Whereas I don't know if anything is quite serving the function that Tumblr serves, you know,
sexual, like, sexual gratification.
Well, it could just been like a fad thing, the way that they're talking about like soft grunge aesthetics coming back and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. I just think when people engage with the renaissance of these things, it's on a very superficial level. So I don't fully know if they'd commit that hard, but we'll see.
Who knows? Maybe you'll be reblogging your words.
I honestly just think a new platform will crop up that mimics it.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like how Substack is basically WordPress, you know?
Yes. But even still, like, the Tumblr used by, like, these new teens won't be the Tumblr that we knew, like, not fully. Since buying Tumblr, Matt Mullenweg has been asked repeatedly about reversing the porn ban. In 2022, they loosened a lot of their restrictions, allowing for mature content and nudity, but this, like, excluded explicit depictions of sex. But as for, like, reversing the porn ban outright, there's, like, a lot of reasons why it just can't really happen.
Why?
Well, for one, he says credit card companies are anti-porn, which they are. If we mentioned this at the end of last episode, but like a lot of them are refusing to work with Pornhub now.
This is going to become very important in next week's episode.
Well, exactly. And Automattic relies on credit cards for part of its revenue in other ways. So like they can't really break off those.
What on the internet doesn't,
relationships, right? Yeah. And then, you know, part of the reason for the porn ban in the beginning was what happened with the Apple App Store. And Apple still has very strict rules around porn, so they can't really rock that boat.
Like, no offense, you're all prudes.
Yeah. Apple.
Grow up.
Tim Cook. And then he also says non-consensual sharing has grown exponentially. And so, like, revenge porn and, like, underage users sharing nude materials are both huge risks on Tumblr, especially in the smartphone.
After the porn ban.
No, just in general, but it's, like, I think more people have smartphones. Like, I think it's just become more than, like, that they were able to handle when they first...
It was desktop-oriented.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot to deal with as a company that wasn't created to be a porn website. So, like, you might not want to put the moderation rules in place to, like, deal with that. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, it's really hard to find traditional service providers and investors who will work with sites that show adult material. So, like, really, it's, like, I don't think any of this is necessarily, like, a platform failing its people so much as it is just, like, a culture that won't allow them to do what they want.
And really, it all comes back to the suburban parents, because the reasons those companies don't want to work with porn distributors is because the suburban parents will pull their clientele away.
Well, exactly. And they will get called out for it and stuff. Like, yeah. Until people were like, this is a problem, it was fine.
The suburbs really was the death of culture. I'll say it now.
I just want to end it off with a question. We're going to be dedicating an entire episode to them, but do we think that the Tumblr porn ban could have influenced the current culture of pure teens, or like kind of led to it?
Well, yeah, I think teens are oddly like less exposed to sex on the internet now, and maybe that makes it a bit more of a boogeyman for them, like a bit scarier. I don't know for sure, to be honest, but I think, like we're talking about with us, potentially being influenced by this kind of like sexual liberation movement, they haven't really had one. And so I think hearing all of these kind of anti-sex discourses probably contributed. I mean, there's Twitter, so they can still get it there. Twitter is like a huge hub for porn now. Like, it's, you can, and a lot of people I know get the majority of their porn from Twitter. So like, I don't think so, because it's just moved elsewhere. I think they can still get it. They're still accessing it. I think it's other things, to be honest, than okay. These like invisible forces.
Well, I guess I just mean if formative spaces for teenagers, which maybe Twitter's become now, but like I can't imagine in the same way that Tumblr was, as far as like tastes and things go, if those spaces are kind of like censored and limited in a certain
way. It's true.
Would it not contribute to like your perspective or your worldviews?
Yeah, I think it could limit your worldview. It's just adding to the project of like sheltering children, which I just think is stupid, to be completely honest. Like, yes, shelter them, but to me, like, a child seeing pornography isn't any more fucked up than a child being part of a family channel on YouTube, like a child watching a family channel. But like, this is the greatest fear. I don't know. I just think I really hate anti-sex discourse, and I think it's so backwards. It doesn't help anything. It's not getting us anywhere. I do think of Twitter as kind of like the natural successor to Tumblr. Like you were saying, people moved from Tumblr to these other spaces. And I think the porn exodus also kind of happened. I don't know if porn was always prevalent on Twitter. I only recently, like a couple years ago, realized that there was so much porn on Twitter. And it's just like an interesting case study because it's like the last standing social networking site that kind of still allows porn.
Yeah.
And I find it strange because Twitter's revenue comes mostly from advertising. So it's like, why is it this gap? Because most of the people I know get their porn off Twitter, which I think is so fascinating.
Well, I think like with Tumblr, when they took porn off, they were sort of like, look, we don't have the numbers or the power of these other sites to really be able to fight back against Apple. Like if Apple's saying we're going to remove you for like these violations, we kind of have to play ball.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Twitter is so popular. It's such a popularly downloaded app. It's used by so many more people and is so much more culturally relevant in so many sects of life that I don't think that, you know, any one body could have the same amount of authority over what it does based off of like a monopoly or something.
And I guess it's founder dependent. Like Mark Zuckerberg has just been extremely puritanical about the way that he's cracked down on nudity. I think maybe because he got a lot more pushback. He's had a lot of run-ins with the law because of his position.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's it. Like, he's a bit more scared or risk-averse. Maybe he's more money-hungry. Like, probably not. I think they're all evil and money-hungry. But, like, I just think it's interesting because I didn't realize Twitter. I hadn't used Twitter in years until recently. And I didn't realize that people were consuming porn on there.
Oh, my God. I was looking up, like, something about, like, a movie or something on Twitter, like, yesterday. And
yeah,
there's just an image of a erect penis.
It has a similar thing to what Tumblr did, where apparently if the age of your account, like under your account, is younger than I think 18, you can't view that content. And then also I think you have to flag the content as like adult content.
Okay.
Because, you know, it blurs out images. Like you'll be scrolling and an image will be censored, and then you have to click on the image to uncensor it.
Okay.
But I know like Trisha Paytas was posting full squirt pics on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, totally. Caroline Calloway posted all her nudes on Twitter. Like, it's...
Oh, my God, right.
Before she made an OnlyFans, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, like, definitely those things exist on Twitter. I think it really is just about, like, size and power in a way. Like, Tumblr was at its peak nowhere near Facebook Twitter in, like, its ubiquity.
Yeah, totally.
So it just couldn't really get away with as much.
I think moral of the story is stop bullying the little guy. Don't bully the alternative girls.
No, because one day they might grow up to be beautiful podcasters.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.